I'm happy to see all the non-drunkard Pendragon players gathered together today.
The people who passed the check.
Yeah. Anyway, my name's Greg Stafford. I think you know that. I don't have to explain myself. We're here to talk about Pendragon. This is Bob Schroeder, one of our contributors. David Larkins, one of our contributors. Steve Wick, the king. or maybe the Merlin, the guy who pulls the string. Steve is running Nocturnal these days. And we want to start with Steve explaining some of the stuff about the company and what's going on in general. Then we'll come to talking about some of the specific items that are coming up and then take questions. I'm sure there'll be time. So.
Yeah.
Take it away, Steve.
Yeah, so I'll start with the painful part first, which was, of course, that last summer my brother Stuart died. And then after his death, I stepped in to take over operating Nocturnal. And my normal day-to-day job is drive-through RPG, thus my shirt today. But Stuart and I, of course, had founded White Wolf and with Mark Reinhagen, and so I know something about role-playing game publishing. I haven't done it as long as Greg. So I stepped in to take over, and there were a lot of projects not related to Pendragon on the go that we've been managing and getting out to backers and things. But in the midst of all that, we've certainly made an earnest effort to continue Pendragon, and certainly now, after a year has passed, we're in an even stronger place to continue doing more and more for the line. So I'm kind of excited today that we get to talk about an actual release schedule and, you know, things coming for the game and all this stuff. So when Stuart passed, the Paladin Kickstarter, did anyone here back the Paladin Kickstarter by chance? Okay, thanks.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I did.
Okay. That was like literally ready to go the next week. So we did proceed and do that. And the project by and large has gone well, except that the artwork kind of went off the rails in the midst of everything. We didn't have as tight art direction as we should have because we had so many balls in the air after so much happening. There was just no other way to describe what happened. So some of the artists whose art we thought was incredible turned in art that we thought was not quite as incredible. And if you saw the first draft released of Paladin, you saw some of that. So we've delayed Paladin so that we could get new art, some additional art, some new art. And so the new version of the game is coming out imminently, and as well as the first release of the adventure book that accompanies that. So that will go out to backers certainly by the end of the month. I'm hopeful it would even be in the next 2 weeks. And we'll probably wait for backers and folks to have early access and help us see any mistakes made in the layout or anything else, although it's all been edited and proofread. Something slips through every time. So we'll wait a couple weeks to get that feedback, and then we'll send everything to press, and we'll release those titles more broadly for folks who want to adventure in the era of Charlemagne. So Paladin is on its way and doing fine at this point. We have all the maps. We have everything in for it. It's just finishing the last bit of layout on the adventure book. And then we have an exciting schedule going forward. So, the other big topic I almost forgot was what the heck is going on with Chaosium.
Yeah, why is that logo appearing?
Why is that logo? As everybody here probably knows, Chaosium and Greg were the original publishers, and Pendragon has a story and history beyond that. Thankfully, as we're now looking ahead and releasing more product, as well as other non-Pendragon product, but mostly with the 5.2 edition, and also, of course, Prince Valiant that's out and other titles that originally had a home at Chaosium, we've worked out a great relationship with Chaosium where they're going to be sort of a publisher in some ways and a distributor. They're essentially going to present the product out to hobby stores worldwide for us. So the products will be available directly from Chaosium from their store, and they'll also be our representation out into hobby sales trade. Nocturnal is still the publisher. We're still creating the product and printing it and doing all of that. But Chaosium is helping us by things like Gen Con appearances and things. So it's a great relationship so far. I'm looking forward to letting fans see Pendragon with a Chaosium logo and a Nocturnal logo on it and get even more confused on into the future.
Which booth are you going to be at?
Right, Chaosium booth. All Pendragon will be at Chaosium booth every show now.
Yeah, unfortunately we sold everything that we had brought to this show, but...
More fortunately.
Well,
I guess that's a fortunate...
That's such a bad problem.
It does have its good side. It does have its good side. Yeah. All right, anything else?
No, that's it, thanks.
That's for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
you do have to tell the good side of your brother's death.
Yes, I should. So, So, you know, my brother's favorite hobby was fencing. And so when he passed, he actually was fencing at a fencing practice. And he had just done a light fencing workout. And he walked off the floor to talk to his friend, his coach, and his wife, Jennifer, who is now technically the owner of Nocturnal, by the way, and will be doing art direction on some future books we'll talk about in a minute. And then he just fell over, and that was it. But we're kind of happy that he died with a sword in his hand, and it seemed a very Pendragon-esque thing. So,
if you gotta go, that's the way, huh?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Go to Valhalla.
David Larkins here is... one of our great discoveries. And David has recently had a product released, which he's going to tell you about in the next couple minutes, if you would.
Okay. The feast, right?
Yeah.
You know which one it is.
I do. So Steve actually alerted me to something I hadn't even realized, which was that we had a bit of a famine in terms of Pendragon releases there for a while. So it's fitting that our first release was Feast. It's the Book of Feasts. It was actually a commission from Stuart based on some house-ruled feast cards that I put together for my group that recorded our playthrough of the GPC. And so it was basically 2 years of playtesting, you know, the feast deck. And Stuart said, hey, we got to make this, you know, an official product. So the aim of the feast deck and the Book of Feasts is to elevate medieval feasting, which was very important, to the same level as tournaments, you know, battles. So it's a system within the system that allows you to game out the sort of social intrigue that happens at feasts, the embarrassing moments when the dog starts pulling at the hem of your tunic and trying to get to your food, or, you know, when the host rises and calls a toast and how well you, you know, respond to that. And intriguing, flirting, gambling, gaming, challenges, you know, it's all in there. And it's a 160 card deck with a 10 page system. It's a very simple system, but the rest of the book is details on medieval feasting, how it happened, you know, who played what role, the importance of the salt, you know, the importance of serving the upper crust, literally, off a loaf of bread to the Lord, that sort of thing, you know. So, a lot of details that, you know, you read through it as a game master or as a player, and you can bring that into your game. And we even have some medieval recipes in the back, so if you wanted to... create a sensory experience. And there's a short scenario outline, really, because the feast deck generates the action, so you can't really write a scenario for the feast deck. But there's a little short scenario at the back that gives you a 3-year framework that you can, like, base your feasts around if you wanted to.
And that's available on DriveThru.
That is available on DriveThru. The book is PDF only. The card deck you can either get in PDF printed, or you can also get it ready for Roll20 or other virtual tabletops.
You know, we believe in multimedia, but we did have to put our foot down to include a feast with each deck.
Yes.
And we're especially happy with this because it really goes in and gives a lot of emphasis to the court action which has also always had kind of a short shrift in presenting where, when, how, and what to play. And this fills that gap very well.
Do you earn glory for throwing a really good feast?
Oh, yes. And you can earn glory for performing well at the feast. Actually, everybody tracks their geniality. And the person with the most, so it's almost like a little competitive game where you're trying to rack up the most geniality by the end of the feast. So the person who gets the most geniality gets a nice little feast glory bonus at the end.
So what kind of things are on the cards?
Well, kind of like what I was saying, there's bad things, there's good things, you know.
Like a flip this up for like a random good or bad event.
Exactly. The more glory you have, the more cards you draw and then you can choose from. So it makes it less likely that a really glorious knight is going to have something embarrassing happen. Yeah.
But not impossible.
Not impossible, no. There are mandatory cards that you have to play regardless.
Right.
So.
And we'll go through some stuff. If everybody will just save your questions, write them down, whatever you need to do. We'll get to those all at the end and provide them more entertainment. Bob Schroeder here is an old compatriot of mine. Have we known you 30 years?
Yeah.
And recently has done another product. It will be the next release for us, which he will tell you about.
Is that a goal?
Go. You're on the clock.
I want to make sure. All right. Called Book of Sires. If you're familiar with the Pendragon game, there's a chapter about Salisbury that you can create the back history of your father and your grandfather. Book of Sires expands that area to all the realms that are going to be friendly to Uther at the beginning of the game. Starts in 439, just like regular, but you may start out in Aquitaine, you may start out in Cornwall, and through the year-by-year events that you find out, you're eventually going to go to the default is Salisbury. Or the game master may have said, you know what, I'm going to set mine not in Salisbury, but I'm going to put it over in Kent. Don't ask me why you want to choose Kent, but he could start there. By choosing Kent, he's forcing what's going to happen is when the Saxons invade, you're going to flee to Britain. All right. So there are tables, there are events like that that you have to decide. Even if your grandfather's dead, you as a family member, whoever's running the family, whether it be an aunt or an older brother, that's up to you to decide, may end up going there. And then eventually you will arrive, you will come back with Aurelius during the invasion and carry forth his. And at the end, you're going to be put wherever the game master wants it to finally be. Okay. I have a pre-copy, mostly no artwork, but if you want to examine it after the seminar, you're more than free to do so. Ask questions.
We have 4 more minutes, man.
Oh, okay. When I'm up and talking, I don't know how many I have. The great thing about it is it goes. You can choose where you want to start the campaign. If you want to treat this like GBC, you can start before 439. All right. In which case, you're going to see the rise and the fall of King Vortigern. King Vortigern, of course, is the king that invited the Saxons in, ends up marrying Hengist's daughter, and essentially betrays the king. Okay. Or you may be up in Cumbria. Cumbria is where the middle part of England, pretty much solid, don't care about the south, don't care about the Picts in the north, and it has its own story, and if you're playing a game in independent, it's the most. If I remember correctly, you're running a campaign in Cumbria, am I right on that?
I ran a part of the campaign in Cumbria,
So it gives you a lot of background if you want to set a campaign other than just Salisbury. I go through the history of each section. I have a complete chronology table, but then in each section I tell you your personal history for that area. You also have, at the end, you could set it a little bit further. It is designed, if you want to take it that far, where you start with your grandfather and father, well, you can move it back a generation, and the grandfather here becomes your great-grandfather. The father becomes the grandfather, and where you would start, I have tables carrying you through the anarchy. You become the father of the knight when King Arthur holds the sword. So there's a lot of things in here. There are purposely put in certain areas where You may know it one way, a story event. You may know it a different way. Because there were no televisions, there were news meetings. All you had was word of mouth. And if I don't know if you've ever gone through a training session where the person who leads this training session comes up and tells you a real story, and then you have to tell your neighbor and then tell and find out how bad this story got mangled by the end. It happens. Well, same thing here. If, remember, you didn't have cars. People stayed pretty much in one area unless some cataclysmic event forced you out. Last thing I could possibly mention is I have appendixes in the back that tell you what you can do if you're family, if you want a bigger family, if you want to create a character that starts specifically. I don't want to be first part. I want to be fourth part. Well, it tells you how to handle your first, second, and third brothers up there. Or maybe they're all daughters. You may be the firstborn son, but you're possibly third in line. If you come from Aqua Teen, that might matter. Okay? So, I think it's a love of art, or art of active love for me. I've been working on this for 10 years. A lot of history's in there. I dropped it on Greg's lap about 5 years ago and said, here you go. What do you think? He says, rewrite it. And it's now gotten to be where it was good enough that it was accepted and is, as I said, first line. Where we're at right now is, as what Steve was saying earlier, he wasn't satisfied with the artwork. We were literally light there, delaying it for just a little bit for more and better artwork.
Yeah, so I'd say the release of that will come before the end of the year, hopefully November.
And since you now know that I rejected a work that had been being worked on for 5 years, you know why. There's a cruelty check on the character. But it was for a good purpose.
That's a specific joke.
Yeah. Book of Feast is out. Book of Sires will be the next one. We have a couple other products that are really great. That are the content is virtually done, if not completely done, and one of those is by David. No. One of these we're going to give
other
it,
David.
Yeah, it's by a friend of mine, David Zeman, who's been in my campaigns. Very smart guy, has a particular interest in parts of Pendragon. I'm going to turn it over to David to talk about it because he's been polishing it up and finishing it.
So the title of the book is The Book of Magic, and this is the 5th edition treatment of spellcasters in Pendragon. Sorry for my voice, it's Sunday. Now, David Zeman took the 4th edition Celtic Magic system, if anyone's familiar with that, as his basis. But in my opinion, he did something really brilliant with it. Because in 4th edition Pendragon, you had these enchanter or sorcerer characters that you could make. But it was like, how do you integrate that with a group of knights? You know, it kind of got it into this D&D style realm, which is, you know, counter to the spirit of the game. What David Zeman did is he said, you can make a magician as a secondary character who you can rotate in either as a player or as a one-time game master. So this kind of represents the fact that a lot of times spellcasters in the literature and the lore will sometimes be helping and sometimes be antagonistic. So you could sit in as a game master and run, you know, an antagonistic scenario with your sorceress or what have you that's trying to challenge the other player knights. Other times, that same sorceress might be on hand to help with some sort of magical assistance, you know, summoning up a fog and allowing you to ride across the sea, for example. That's just the core of it. This is a huge book. I think it's definitely over 100,000 words. I can't remember the exact word count. But there's guidance in there for playing druids, ladies of the lake, sorceresses, sorcerers. It's all heavily rooted in actual Arthurian literature. His level of scholarship on this book is insane. He read every single medieval text that featured a spellcaster in it. Yeah, and has integrated all of it together into a system that really works. It's a fantastic system, in my opinion. And when I got the draft, I was reading through it. I just got really excited. Like, I can't wait to have this in my game.
What is happening with his book of all his list of all the magic that appears in all the Pendragon, medieval Arthurian material that he compiled?
That is in there. There's a whole chapter of every kind of enchanted item, magical item that appears in the literature with game mechanics and how to integrate it into your game. There's details on pagan gods in the back and what happens when you encounter them. Generally not terribly good things. There's a system in the appendices for running what he calls magical challenges, which is your sort of classic, you're riding through the forest and you find a lady in a tent and there's a horn hanging from the nearby branch and there's a small fountain, and if you pour the water in the fountain and blow the horn, something happens, you know, and then you're sort of pulled into this alternate reality where you then have to go through a challenge. And that can be either set up by the Game Master, or if someone's running a, you know, player magician, they can set that up again as a guest Game Master and run that for the rest of the group.
Yeah. Wonderful piece of work.
It really is.
One of the things I want to add about Book of Sires is that in its content, it draws upon all kinds of 6th century history and also Arthurian literature to have that happened in those pre-Pendragon times, so that you get a little glimpse of that too, whether you know it or understand it or not. It's very cool for that matter. If you do have some familiarity with the literature and you go through here, it's kind of, oh, Max and Welding, oh my God, this is so cool. So it's another virtue of the game, of the supplement.
I don't think I did it quite as extensive as maybe David did, but in the back here on the last page, I list my references. It's over, it's a column and a half. Now, that's been cut down because just before I sent it off, the final thing, I went through and checked every possible link again, and over half of my links didn't work. So I, as of when I sent it to them, every one of these links still worked. But there's also a list of actual books.
Yeah. That's why books are superior to computers. The item that follows, or maybe will even precede the Book of Magic, we're not sure, is the Book of Castles. This is by Nick Tolimieri, who's been playing Pendragon since it came out, and he's been working on it for a long time as well. It is based on the current castle system of Pendragon, where you have the DV, the defense value, and goes into a lot of detail about it and so on. Goes into some things about siege times, starving to death, dying of plague, or dysentery. It's all in there for the mechanics of the siege, which is included. Sieges were the most pervasive type of combat in the Middle Ages. It's just not very romantic compared to face-to-face, lance in your face. Combat, even in the literature, but of course it is still part of it. It even occurs a couple times in the literature. But every so often there's a real reason to play out the whole time, especially if player characters are there, and especially if it's someone like their own enemy. So there are rules for the siege. We don't expect it to be every battle. We expect battles to be the lance in the face type. But there's still the time for it. And so there's some pretty long, it's not pretty long, there's some pretty detailed rules on how to besiege. And it's really quite fun. It was a long time in the working. And, you know, if you're going to get into that detail, you might as well have fun with it so you get to decide how many of which kind of siege machine you get. And because they have different effects, there are different categories for it. You know, some destroy walls, some destroy people, some are just there to, you know, the siege tower is, it's a great piece of equipment, but it costs, and it's really a tragedy when they burn it down. It also has information on in case you are the ones that are besieged. So you can be on either side of the wall for it. We were originally going to include a list of the DV for all the castles in England, but it turned out to be a 230-page book. So we're not putting that in there. And after really just looking at all the castles in Britain, I said, you know, that's way too many for King Arthur. But there will be some selected castles. There are instructions on how to determine the DV for them, if you wish, because you can look up information on just about any castle and convert it yourself. So that's that will be the fourth product of the four that we have this year. Do you know when those magic or...
The castle's manuscript is done, and it's in editing. So it will follow, it would almost definitely be the one that follows Sires.
All right.
And it'll be early next year, I would expect.
So it'd be Sires, then Magic. We have other items in the works, but they're not really done yet, and they're not on the schedule, and I do not like to even discuss and talk about them very much. Because it always raises expectations, and people actually believe what we speculate might be the release time, and then we spend months, if not years, isn't it done yet? And so to avoid that, we're not going to talk about a lot of things that are not completed yet. But there is one additional one that will be coming up sometime in the future. That's worth discussing, and that's Myrmidons. Is it plural or singular?
Singular.
Myrmidon. I don't know if you know, but the Myrmidons were the army, the people of Achilles, and this is a book based on Greek mythology, using the Pendragon system. It's a nice fit. You know, it's got a little bit more in the way of cults and gods than Pendragon. But you can take part in all the great adventures of the Bronze Age. And that's in the works. It's one of an infinite series of games using the Pendragon system into another realm that people may enjoy. But we hope you'll enjoy it. Yeah. At least it's easy to get artwork for it. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's another game that has been bandied about that people ask me every month when it's not done yet. Isn't it coming soon? And we'll just mention it briefly, and we'll allow David to speak briefly about it. Okay. But there's no release date. It's going to be a long time.
Greg, if I could, though, on Myrmidon, that one is... much further along, so we have an edited manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
We are not going to repeat what happened with Paladin art, so we are contracting all the art now. We've got a couple of pieces in that are gorgeous.
Oh, absolutely.
And really, yeah, really evocative of those classic Greek battles. And so I'm excited by it. And it is something that's more imminent, like Sires and Castles, in that it will. But that will go through a Kickstarter process, most likely.
Will these other three that are not yet released go through the Kickstarter?
Probably
process?
Not. We'll just release them and.
Right. I don't know if you're all familiar with the Pendragon Forum. If you're not, what's the URL?
Nocturnal Media Forum, I believe.
Right. It's a great Q&A. It's full of people like yourself who have an intense interest in it. And if anybody ever has a question concerning the rules or the setting or options, they send it there and it gets a fantastic response. So I encourage you to go there. It's also where we earliest try to release the news of what's coming up. So you can find out when these are coming through that. That's the list of things that we have. And it's timed perfectly because we still have some time for questions, which I encourage you to ask, please.
It's a little further down the line, so.
Well, it's quite a ways down the line.
Yes.
Because we don't want to come out with alternate settings that are going to compete with each other or with the game. But one that we have mentioned in the past, so we can just mention it again, is
Samurai.
Samurai.
So, yeah, and this is, it's set in, it's not set in the kind of traditional Warring States 16th century period, you know, the Kurosawa type films. This is set in the late 10th, early 11th century. This is a time in Japanese history where, much like with Pendragon, you have society sort of coming apart at the seams. You have a lot of quasi-mythological figures who actually existed but have had whole story cycles built up around them. And it's also an interesting take on samurai, because at this time they're more like mounted archers than they are, you know, swordsmen, that sort of thing. It's the late Han period, if you're familiar with Japanese history. Greg brought me in on that project because we had a Japanese game designer, Nobuaki Takarube, who was going to work on it and unfortunately couldn't.
Yeah.
And so I basically came in and wrote the early first draft. We're in early first draft mode. So, you know, we're playtesting, we're refining, and, you know, it'll come out eventually. It's in the works.
I think it's more than first draft mode myself.
Okay.
And although TAC was unable to devote the time and energy to write the game, he is our advisor.
Yes.
Which is very, very cool. Because I had spoken to him about Japanese opinion of American games about samurai, and he basically said, "You're all wrong." You know, I said, "What would it take to have someone do one right?" And he said, "Have a Japanese person write it." You know, I said, "Okay, you got the job." But since he can't do it, and David can with his own knowledge, but Tack is right over his shoulder, you know. Checking not just the spelling, but also the content, and making sure that it's going to be acceptable to Japanese people.
Yeah.
So I sure hope it floats in America, too. But I think it will. I think it will. It looks quite interesting. So, anything else I forgot? Anyone else's lines I stepped on?
Did you mention wood or bone? Woodlands or bone? Not now.
No, because we have some more items in the works. We actually have a lot of material in the works. A lot. More than we've had for a very, very long time. You know, there is one other piece of news that we will, I'd like to share. And that is that I've been in this business a long time. And my time is limited. I've got some other things I want to do. I don't quite have the juice to work as much as I used to. And I'm very much interested in maintaining this game for your sake and for the game's sake. So we're working on not just getting a staff at Nocturnal to keep it going, but to replace me eventually. And it's a big job. And it's not something I would trust anybody with, but there are some people that I trust to do it. I'm very excited about some of his new ideas. And to discuss this just a little more, we're going to introduce you to the protege line editor for Pendragon, who is David. Do you want to say anything about?
Well, just that I'm tremendously excited about this, obviously, but on a personal level, just because Pendragon's my favorite role-playing game of all time. But, like Craig said, we have a ton of material, and the idea that we can get a steady flow of releases started up again and work through this backlog and start working towards, you know, some of these things we were teasing about there just a second ago. And more down the line, like Greg said, we're discussing a vision for the line that stretches, you know, several years into the future. So,
and I'm very happy about it, believe me. So, yeah, that'll leave me with just the obligation to continue to write content, which is way more fun.
Yes, I'll be doing the editing and looking for new talent to bring in and various other tasks of that nature that Greg, you know, would like to focus on actually creating rather than doing all that kind of stuff.
You never know. You might even one day see the Book of Fairy.
Yeah.
How's the 30 years in the promising? It's not out yet. No. No deadlines.
It's still on the other side. So
it's
we have
still
to get
on
back.
The other side. It's really hard to manifest it.
It does. Right. It really does.
It's only a couple minutes late on that side. We'll end it there.
Yeah.
Take any questions. Anything else that you guys want to add at the moment?
No.
A couple of questions. One, regarding the upcoming releases, like the Book of Sire and Castles of Magic, will those be available via Chaosium and brick and mortar stores?
We are, that is undecided yet. I hope so. And certainly part of the relationship with Chaosium was to empower that sort of thing to happen. So I can't give you a definitive yet on that, but that would be our hope. Yeah. Certainly we're going to be releasing the core rulebook, which has now gone out to Prince Valiant backers. So we'll be releasing that, and it'll start appearing in hobby stores, but not till the end of the year due to
the
5-2 book, exactly.
Which reminds me to plug another product from Nocturnal, which is the Prince Valiant role-playing game. I don't know if you're familiar. If you all have it, raise your hand, then I won't talk about it. You know, Prince Valiant is a comic strip by Hal Foster that started in 1937. It's actually still going now, but it's on its third artist and writer. Hal died, I think, 1965 or something. I grew up on it. I had the pleasure of, when I was designing the role-playing game, I met a man who owned the complete, every single page from the Sunday comics. You know, and they were big, in plastic, and I could sit down and read it from the very start for about 6 hours. And it was kind of fun, because I came to one page, and I read it, and I remembered when I had read it as a child, and I thought to myself, okay, I like this. And Prince Valiant really had an impact on how Pendragon is formed, although mine's more detailed, but there's a lot in common. And I went through life with people saying, oh, so you make games, can we play one? You know, and I'd pull out RuneQuest and say, no, but you can look at this and see why we can't. And I wanted to do a game that was simple. So Prince Valiant is the first published storytelling game, even before Vampire, which the authors acknowledge. And it's one-page rules. And it's, instead of dice, you flip coins. And it's got two stats. And it's storytelling. And it's beautifully illustrated. And it is made to teach people, like, here's what role-playing's about. And it's gorgeous inside. And we released it at Chaosium years and years ago. But we have a new edition out, which is way prettier than the old one. And it's just $10?
No, it's $25.
Oh, $25. Just $25.
But it's full color.
Yeah, full color. And that's cheap these days. But also with the new release, there's a scenarios book. So it's not just the easiest game in the industry to teach and to play, but it's now also the easiest game to game master. Because the scenarios take up about 2 pages. And they're fun. And they're all written by not me. So it's even more fun. But they're all written by well-known game designers.
Yeah, it's a real who's who list of great game designers.
Yeah.
And some up-and-comers as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some people coming up as well. In the
that's right, yeah. Yes. Plus these gentlemen who are great Pendragon writers. Mm-hmm. And I recommend it. Come by and take a look at it. It's a fun game.
Do you have it for sale here?
Yes. We haven't sold that one out yet.
Okay. We might be able to fix it.
Oh, multiple copies?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's great to do it too. Like,
yes.
Yeah. There's a teacher class that comes down and kids all like just pick it up like super quick.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. You can even play kids in it because Prince Valiant, you know, it's in its time, it has gone through time so that his children are now adults and Prince is getting old and the stories are mostly about his children, which is quite cool. But they're also in there when they're little. Yeah, there's a funny thing about the Prince Valiant series that when Hal Foster started it way back then, he got a publisher for it. I mean, I forgot the name of them, but they were doing the Sunday comics, and he wanted to do a game called Prince Arn. And I said, that's a terrible name, you know. Call him Prince Valiant. And he said, all right, you know. But after like 20 years of doing the comic, there was a series where, a story where his wife gets kidnapped by an evil Viking, and Prince Val takes off after him, and they sail to the New World, and they go up the St. Lawrence Seaway, St. Lawrence River now, but they go there and have adventures with the indigenous people and so on in upstate New York. And what's funny is that that's where Hal Foster used to live, is upstate New York. And Princess Aaliyah has her baby in the New World, first European born in the New World, you know, and I'm sure it's on Hal Foster's farm, you know, and so he got to, and so the son is named Arn, and so after another 10 or 15 years, he was writing adventures about Prince Arn, at last, you know, and I think that is just such a great personal coup,
yeah.
You know. So please come and take a look at it. Anyway, even if you don't like
it's
the art,
book.
It's gorgeous. You know, it's not comic book art. So,
did you have another question?
Yeah.
So you mentioned like your sources that you're using for Book of Sire. And I remember the first time I picked up a Pendragon book and was like, "Whoa, this role playing book has a bibliography. That's awesome." And I was just kind of, and so I've always appreciated that. But I was just kind of wondering. If there were any particular sources, because just a list of them doesn't really give us your insight and input, but I was just wondering, especially for like Book of Beasts and Book of Sires and these things that you, of course, must have researched a whole lot, if there was any particular sources that you just found yourself continuing to come back to or leaning on especially heavy.
The HRB.
What's the HRB?
History of Right Now for the Time.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mallory, my two biggest. And also a lot of the previous Pendragon products I have, of course, and I've used them as references as well. I've got numerous other books. Morris, Age of Arthur, I believe, is a book about that thick. Goes through all the history, archaeological, things like that. And whether Arthur was down here or up there, he was actually supposedly discredited because people... So that's sacred. You can't put him somewhere else. He went to archaeological digs. You know. So it's what I had a chance to do is convince with Greg here and said, all right, what history do you want to follow? What do you want to follow? He gave me the opportunity to pretty much write the history where that involves some historical accuracy, because we've got mythology, we've got legends. You know, how do you fit that all into here? The one story we don't talk about much, although I don't know if we're going to get in trouble, is Merlin. Was Merlin a good guy or a bad guy? You know? Was he manipulating this from the very beginning? You know? Or did he decide at the last minute, Arthur's the better person to become king? And you as a game master, follows the standard rule, your Pendragon may vary. You have freedom of will. What type of king story do you want to tell? What I did was I wrote a history that chronological fits history with our legends, our input put into it. But you don't like something in there, change it.
Right.
But basically, legend trumps history. And Geoffrey of Monmouth's book, History of the Kings of Britain, Historia Regnum Britannia, is sort of the most canonical for prehistory for Arthur. I mean, it starts with the first humans to settle. His book starts with the first humans to settle in Britain, grandson of refugees from Troy. And it goes all the way through, and the King Arthur part is the largest part of the book. It's maybe a quarter or a third of the book. But his was the first book that was written and popular all over the place. And he really set the parameters of the Arthurian legend. But it's nothing like Malory, which is, except for the beginning, the end, and the basic facts. When you work with the Arthurian sources, the problem is not finding the material, but selecting which material you want to use, because they all conflict. And so Malory and Geoffrey together pretty much sort of fill in the gaps, but they don't fill in all the gaps. And so any other books that you can find are useful. Just remember that for my Pendragon, legend trumps history. So you can't use Roman history as a source, because it's not true. Those are just rumors and legends that wander around in the Pendragon world. You go to Geoffrey for the true history of the Romans in Britain. And, you know, they didn't conquer it. I mean, it's...
Propaganda.
Yeah, it's propaganda.
You know, it's
propaganda. British never quite lose that badly. Just when they do lose that badly, it's just for a short time. But those are the two main books.
But Greg, if you wanted to read Malory, what edition would you recommend someone read next year?
You know what? The edition that you want to read next year is the one by John Matthews. I don't know if you know John. He's an old friend of mine, but he's really big on writing about British legend, magic, occultism, and so on. He's really, really knows his stuff, and he's coming out with a new version of Le Morte. And along with that, he asked me to add some marginalia to it to explain some of the material in it. And the marginalia is about 60,000 words, and is a lot of information about where stuff came from, and what stuff means. And I remember reading Malory for the first time, and there was more than once where I thought, "What the heck just happened there?" You know. And I understand it now, and so I included the explanations for those kind of things in it, so that you can do it. And that's a new book that's coming out, and it'll be available from everybody's favorite Arthurian publisher, which is
Nocturnal Media, I hope.
Yeah, do you have a date for that?
It's coming out with a companion volume. It was kickstarted some time ago now, unfortunately. But we're waiting for those final pieces of art of the companion volume that mm-hmm. accompanies it. And so it depends on the artist, who's already a couple months late. And we're a little bit taxed by that. So now the art is absolutely gorgeous.
We won't name the artist's name here on, since we're being recorded. No, you know, it is art worth waiting for, but we are having to wait for it, so it'll make the books that much more beautiful when they're done. You know, we hope that that will come anytime now, and then we'll proceed into the layout, proofing, and printing.
May I ask a question about this book?
Yeah, just one moment. Oh, it's sorry. The companion, which is Phyllis Carr's King Arthur companion or Arthurian companion. We published it decades ago at Chaosium. This is revised, right? So it's a charming book. It goes through character by character, place by place, to explain who they are. And one of the reasons it's most charming is that this woman has an opinion about people. And she's not shy to tell you what her opinion is. And so it's a non-academic book, but it's full of academic facts. And so we want to get it. Is John's comic being released at the same time?
Yes, it will.
Yeah, yeah. So at the same time, there'll be a comic book of John Matthews, at least one version of it, one edition, one comic of it.
Yeah.
So, yes, your question.
I was just curious whether the new edition will cue more toward the often impenetrable language of the original, or maybe skew a little bit more closer with Keith Baines in his modern prose rendition, which was the one that I first read, and I found a lot easier to grapple with because the language now uses so much.
Yeah, there is a certain amount of archaic language. It's not like the original. I've read 10 or 15 versions of Lamort by now. He translated a lot of it, but he left in a lot of archaic vocabulary. However, his vocabulary section in the back addresses that very nicely. Very nicely. So, yeah, go for it. Please.
Are your annotations in that volume?
Yes. Yes, they're in the margins. You know, so there's a two texts running side by side. I think we probably drove the layout editor crazy, but but she works in gaming, so what the heck.
Yeah. Any thought to release a PDF or a version that's easier to read for those of us who struggle with books?
Yeah, well, it'll certainly be released digitally as well. Yep.
In a really gorgeous artifact for those
of us who love books.
Oh, yeah. It's if you go to the Kickstarter page, you'll see some of the cover art that was done for it. It's by an artist, Natty, who's not the artist we're waiting on, just to be clear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, the cover pieces. There's one of the questing and one of King Arthur, and boy, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Is the armor immoral?
I think it might still be available through Backer Kit, so you can still do follow-on pledges if you were interested.
Is the armorial in the works?
Sorry, the armorial is in the works, but we're waiting on the Royal Society to finish all of the
Simbaba. Yeah, so another work that I won't mention because we don't know the deadline on it is I guess it was the 15th century, there was a French count. In the 15th century, knights used to LARP. They would LARP as round table knights, and they would each adopt the arms and attitude of the Arthurian heroes and have a real tournament, which is pretty darn cool. And so there was a count who wrote up a description of all of their coats of arms. There's a couple versions of the manuscript. I mean, in one it even tells you what hair and eye color the knights were. But it's gorgeous when you draw it all out. One of the first people I consulted in doing my first edition of Pendragon was the curator of arts and armor at the museum, Metropolitan Museum of Arts and Armor, probably history, in New York, Nickel Helmut. And he, it's why we have the arms we have. And we're going to publish a book of those arms and armor. It's 150 in this list, right?
Sounds about right. I can't remember the
number. It's 150 knights. You know, we only know about 10 or 15 through Mallory. The others are NPCs. Yep. And so, but it's a gorgeous book. Watch for that too. It'll be well worth having. So.
So it sounds like we can look forward to editions of Bars of All and everything coming. You know, you'll fill out all the literature eventually.
Well, right. Maybe. If we can, you know. Yeah.
I have a question about with Myrmidon and some of the games that are sort of using the system. Are these seen as sort of like standalone units, or is the idea they will become lines in their own right? I mean, obviously, in a perfect world, what's the vision with those games?
Well, my vision for them currently, and that will, you know, they will help set that now, as well as Greg always doing that. Is to provide them and enough adventure content, if not of like a full chronicle, to get people going and playing and have a great game experience and run a campaign in it. But we probably wouldn't do more than that for each of these. And then it would be up to each individual gaming group and, you know, if they want to keep going or create more content themselves. Now, if something surprises us and there's huge acclaim for it or the demand, then obviously we'll see what we can do about that. But we're
trying to put as much into those core books as we can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, Paladin's a big book.
Huge amount of information in that book.
Yes.
It has a campaign in there, doesn't it?
Adventures and enough material that you could make many campaigns, actually.
And then there's an adventure book that's releasing with Paladin as well. So, the part of it is, though, I mean, through all of this, you know, we don't want Pendragon itself to carry on and be the main focus. So these are just things where if you're excited by this time period and we love the rule system, I do at least. And
me too.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
So it's just exciting as, let's try this for a chronicle. Let's do this campaign for a while, and then we'll go back and play the GPC only in a different region of...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, if we got a set of adventures from Myrmidon, we would be very happy about that. Anyway,
sure.
And that's how we can tell whether a book is successful, wildly successful or not, is when we start getting unsolicited submissions.
That's right.
So when you see it, keep that in mind. We're almost out of time, so I would like to close by encouraging everybody to become a published author, to do scenarios for us. I've been accused of setting the standard too high, and I can understand that because I'm obsessive compulsive, but we don't need all our adventures to be that way. I want to encourage you to do adventures as you see them. We are happy for two-page encounters. We're happy for short adventures. We're happy for adventures set in a specific period. We're happy to publish whatever you like, perhaps have even played and enjoyed. If it's not perfect, David will explain to you how to make it better. We don't care about perfect, nobody except me, and that's what I mean by obsessive compulsive. But I really want you all to think about it. It's not as hard as you think it is once you start. The first one is the worst. Keep it simple. Don't get complex. And please consider that. If you're a game master, I just want to say the difference between preparing a scenario for play and for publication is about 2 months. But keep it in mind, please. We look forward to your submissions, just as I'm confident you look forward to our emissions.
Where should we send them?
We'll get that set up, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, my website is still extant, although I haven't done much with it in years. It'll be there again on the forum. We'll make that the center of communication.
Yeah.
So I want to thank everybody for coming. I want to thank you for your interest. I want to thank you especially for your support over all these years. We'll do our best to surprise you, delight you, and keep you coming back. So thank you all.
Oh, yes, tickets.
Yes, tickets.
Oh, tickets. Yeah, what do we do with those?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, all.